You know, I think I tried that, Mr. Chairman.
Members, the meeting will come to order, please.
Recess for a little bit.
Almost safe. Got distracted.
It is good to see so many of you here on time and ready to experience another adventure into education reform today. Legislative assistant will note the roll. And Representative Myra, would you move the minutes of February 14th?
To move the minutes. Thank you.
Representative Myra moves the minutes of February 14th. Is there any discussion? Members, I went through this with a fine-tooth comb, so I think they're in really good shape. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted from February 14th. We also have minutes from the joint meeting of February 16th. And let's have Representative Kath. Would you move those, please?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kath moves the minutes of the joint meeting on February 16th. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion and hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. And the minutes are adopted from February 16th. Members, today we have two a House file and a Senate file on the agenda. You'll have two chairs before you, yours truly, and our eminent K-12 Finance Chair, Representative Garofalo. Welcome to the committee, and I'll move House File 2180 to be before the committee, recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Garofalo, go ahead and begin your bill. I believe you want Ms. Larson involved as well.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair. It's a pleasure to be before the committee. And my first question is it 1 o'clock yet?
No, sir. Not yet.
So, Madam Chair and members, this House Bill 2180 is a bill requiring turnaround strategies for lower-performing schools with the development of a multiple measures rating system. And I would defer to Ms. Larson for additional explanation on the sections of the bill.
And Ms. Larson will walk us through the 2180 as we have before us committee. Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, on House File 2180 is introduced. There is a direction to the Commissioner of Education to use AYP to determine annual measurable objectives for public schools and school districts based on four domains. The first is student proficiency on statewide assessments. The second is individual student growth over time. The third is the rate by which disparities in student growth for particular subgroups of students are reduced. And the fourth is, for high schools, the four-year graduation rate. There is a direction to the commissioner to publicly report in an accessible format the data for each of these domains and also for the combined domains for all the schools and districts. The commissioner is also directed to rank order all the schools and districts based on the calculations in each domain and the combined domains. In addition, the bill requires that every third school year, beginning in the 2012-2013 school year, the commissioner is to identify the 5% of lowest performing elementary schools and the 5% of lowest performing secondary schools with a grade 12 that either are receiving or are eligible to receive Title I funds that have the lowest combined performance based upon the domains that are listed in paragraph 1. Once identified, the school is required to submit to one of four turnaround strategies beginning in the proximate school year. The first, be completely redesigned or replaced by a new school. The second, be converted into a charter school. The third, be transformed into a higher performing school using a rigorous and equitable principal evaluation system and teacher evaluation system. Or fourth, be closed and have students transferred to other higher performing schools within that same district. There is a requirement that by no later than the 2013-2014 school year, only a teacher rated as effective or higher and only a principal rated as effective or higher may be employed in a school that is subject to a turnaround strategy. There is a direction to the commissioner to consult with school principals and teachers who work in these lowest performing schools to develop and implement a plan designed to improve student and school outcomes. The plan is required to do a number of things, including establish the terms and conditions of employment, contain programmatic options for students, provide professional development opportunities for educators, increase challenging learning opportunities during and outside the school day targeted to diverse groups of students, increase student engagement and connection and community and family partnerships, and if the school is an elementary school, provide early childhood activities. There is a requirement that a school identified as lowest performing remains or keeps that status for a minimum of 3 school years and until the school demonstrates higher performance in the domains listed as determined by the commissioner. This bill becomes effective immediately and applicable to the 2012-2013 school year and later.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Representative Garofalo, do you have testifiers?
None that I'm aware of.
At this time, we do have some testifiers on our list. So, Jim Bartholomew from the Minnesota Business Partnership, you wanted to testify in favor of this bill? Welcome to the table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Hi, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. And it's always good to be a surprise testifier for the chair of my committee.
We're here to testifying with support for the bill, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me be clear. we are here in support of House File 2180. And while I also want to be clear that the MBP does not support the state's NCLB waiver, we do support this bill for 3 key reasons. First, on an overall basis, it puts into statute some of the key policy issues raised through the waiver process. Second, and more specifically, it uses the current statutory definition for calculating student academic growth. And third, it creates a structure for how the state will address concerns over those schools whose student performance consistently ranks in the bottom 5%. The recent federal NCLB actions, or lack thereof, are perhaps the best reason for adopting House File 2180. By going through the legislative process, legislators, the governor, and the public have direct involvement in determining key education policies. Not only does the legislative process build broader support, but it also ensures greater consistency in policy. And while we'd like to see more emphasis on student proficiency in the annual measurable objectives outlined in paragraph A, both the Minnesota Business Partnership and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce support House File 2180 and encourage you to pass it. Ms. Amy Wallstein of the Minnesota Chamber has a conflict this morning and sends her regrets, but wanted me to pass along their support as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Are there others in the audience who would like to speak in favor of 2180? Then we'll turn to those with concerns. Ms. Allswiger. Welcome to the testifying table. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota. We think that this bill is going farther than what is happening with the waiver process at the department. And if we're going to try to get in sync, that maybe we should work on that waiver process first. I just have some very general comments to make. We think that this timeline is very fast. Even if it were the right thing to do, this goes very, very quickly. Currently, teachers and principals are not labeled as the bill states in here. That would be some issues. And specifically, we have some concerns on the language beginning on line 2.26, which basically takes away employees' rights and working conditions as they know them. And we think that that is also a problem. Certainly there could be some changes in turnaround schools. The St. Paul Union is a classic example of implementing some turnaround school initiatives that make significant changes to employees and to their working conditions, and we think that that's a better option. We're not exactly sure how all the changes and assignments would work, and we believe that should be more of a collaborative model. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Alswiger. Are there others in the audience? Then I'll open it for discussion from members.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
When do you wish to take amendments, if at all?
Let's ask the author of the bill, Representative Garofalo, at what time would you like to take amendments?
Madam Chair, doesn't this committee have a 24-hour rule?
Yes, we do.
And Madam Chair, last night I didn't see any amendments posted on the website.
No, I didn't see any for Representative Garofalo's either. I know you. I think you have one for mine, Representative.
Oh, do I have the wrong bill? All right, maybe I should go up and get coffee. My apologies.
No, you can stay. Just that we do look different.
Yeah.
I could be the mother, and he could be the son.
I'll let you say that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I'll know it's true because my son is the same age.
Clearly, more coffee.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I want to let you know that for 30 seconds there, you put the fear of God into me because I thought maybe this committee did not have a 24-hour amendments coming. So,
you
did well, Representative Dabney. Congratulations.
Representative Norton.
Madam Chair and Representative Garofalo, I guess a couple things come to mind. Certainly, you know, how does this coexist with the waiver, and is this meant to usurp the waiver? And I think I'm hearing perhaps the answer is yes to that. And so there's just a couple things in here that are actually in current law that I'm just going to, they're the underlined items. So a couple concerns I had. One is that we're reaching beyond schools that receive title funds, actually get federal help and therefore are trying to improve, to those that are just simply eligible for. And I guess my question would be, if you're going to go to that, you know, you're going to step beyond the federal law, why not just have all schools? Why just have title and those eligible? Why not every school? Because there may be some schools that don't get title funds or are eligible for title funds that might need improvement. So that was one thought. And I'll just rattle them all off, and then you can choose to answer or not. The other is...
why don't we take that first one, Representative
Norton? You
want to
do it? Okay.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Norton, so if I understand it right, you're saying why is it that we're basing this on the eligibility of Title I's as opposed to receiving of Title I funds?
And if you're making that designation, why not just say all schools?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Norton, the reason why we're making the changes is we want to impact all schools. We want to improve student achievement for all children. In terms of a definition of all schools outside of those that are eligible to receive Title I funds, I would want to know what the difference in schooling is. I'm not aware of a difference in definition. I can defer to Ms. Larson on that, what schools those would be.
The department, I think, is needed at this point. Mr. McHenry.
Did you hear the question?
Here's my favorite department colleague. Welcome to the table, Mr. McHenry.
The amount of schools.
Please say your name for the record and begin.
If I could ask the question if you would.
Representative Norton, would you repeat it? Yes.
Yes, I would. On line 2.9 and 2.10, it says that every third year, and it's lowest performing schools, elementary schools, and then it jumps to secondary schools with a grade 12 receiving or eligible to receive Title I funds. And my question was, if we're really looking to make improvement, why would we go beyond just those receiving it to those eligible? And if we're going to make that jump, why not just ask for all schools?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Kevin McHenry from the Department of Education. I think what you're asking why this would be drafted towards, why wouldn't it be going to all schools instead of just eligible Title I schools?
No, why is, Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Norton, clarify.
Why is it jumping beyond just those receiving Title I schools funds to those receiving and eligible for? And if you're going to make that jump, why wouldn't you just say all schools?
So there's two parts to the question. This one part,
Representative Garofalo.
One part I can answer, and that is that the reason why is we want this to apply to all the schools in Minnesota. in terms of the schools that do not receive Title I funding, I'm not aware of a lack of overlap there. I think that's what the intent, that's what my intent was. Like, what are the non-Title I schools that are not eligible for?
Representative Norton, do you have a clarification you want to make?
Well, I mean, I guess I don't know that every high school in the state of Minnesota is eligible to receive Title I funds, and so I'm just saying, why not all schools?
Mr. McHenry, can you clarify this?
Madam Chair, Representative Norton, I think, are you asking for what schools are, how do schools qualify for Title I? It's based on their free and reduced lunch percentage?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
No, I'm aware how they qualify. I'm wondering why this bill is narrowing it to only those, rather than those that receive title, which, you know, this is expanding it already into the high school area, which currently we're not dealing with. So it's expanding it into high school, but it's not just those receiving Title I, as No Child Left Behind.
Well, Representative Norton, the author would have to answer that. I don't think the department can articulate
the
intent of the author's.
I'm not aware of a different
Representative Garofalo.
Eligible Title I school, public school in a public school.
Mr. McHenry, if you can answer who qualifies, just do that factual piece.
Madam Chair, members, this would be directed at the author for the definition, because obviously there are, as the waiver is applied to Title I schools, and this is a great expansion towards all schools. There could be... you know, obviously, I think this is going to go to the finance division afterwards, and that could require a cost because you are affecting more schools.
Representative Norton.
And Madam Chair, I would just ask the author to talk with someone, and I guess I can't speak specifically to high schools, but there are elementary and middle schools that don't have Title I students in them, and so this wouldn't apply to them. And this is assuming that those schools are automatically doing better. And so I guess I would just say, if you want to hit all schools, hit all schools. If you want only title schools, hit only title schools. But I think this is receiving or eligible, and there are differences in there with the amount of funding a school would get. So I would just ask the author to look into that, and we can talk offline if you'd like.
Thank you, Representative Norton.
And then I had a couple others.
Representative Norton.
Thank you. You seem to be using the traditional... a little bit further down in that same paragraph, the traditional sanctions, if you will. And I'm just asking if I've never liked the provision that says if you're needing improvement, you need to turn into a charter school as one of your options, because many of the schools that aren't achieving are already charter schools. And so I'm going to assume, and I guess I'm asking for clarification, that those charter schools that do not perform and make the AYP list, that they would not be allowed to turn into another charter school, that they would have to convert back into a public school or take one of the other options?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Norton, you used the term sanctions. You know, these are turnaround strategies that can be worked on. If in terms of these are turnaround strategies to improve low-performing schools. In terms of how charter schools exist now and how they would exist in the future, there is no language in here that would prohibit them from being a different charter school or having a different authorizer. One of the remedies that is available is for them to attend other high-performing schools, and there would be no prohibition on that.
Representative Norton.
I won't go into my thoughts about that, but my last question is 3.1 and 3.2. At the top of the page, you say lowest performing school for a minimum of 3 years and until the school demonstrates higher performance. And I would suggest that you at least consider or, because there may be schools who are able to make a quick adjustment and get their names off the list. And it just seems to me a little unfair to have to sit on that list for another 2 years if they're able to make the improvements they need and maintain them.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Martin, you bring up a wise point, and that's something that I considered in drafting this. What I'm told is that generally turnaround strategies, and what we've been advised by the department, is they take 2 to 3 years to implement. Hence the, but I understand your concern, and it's reasonable.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me. I'm glad to hear this is going to the Education Finance Committee, because I think it really does need to be heard there. I was surprised that more testifiers didn't have concerns about this bill, and maybe they just haven't looked at it carefully enough, or maybe they've noticed, like I did, that it has no Senate author and perhaps is not a serious bill, but it does seem to me that that it is nullifying the waiver, and we know that the Chamber of Commerce and the Business Partnership does not support the waiver, so this is a way to go at it. So I guess I'm just going to ask a question of Chair Garofalo. Chair Garofalo, do you support No Child Left Behind, and hence, you know, you don't want to get rid of it or have any kind of flexibility for local school districts to get out from under it? Because this, to me, seems like you're putting back, you know, the four turnaround models. We bring back the issue of the problem with rural schools and their superintendent or their principals, and, you know, the sparsity issues with who's available and to teach there. And so I'm wondering just your general philosophy in bringing forward this bill on No Child Left Behind. I had always thought that you and I agreed that we needed to have states be in charge of education and get out from under all those mandated federal constrictions, but this seems to be putting them back just at the state level, however.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Greiling, no, number one, no, I do not support No Child Left Behind. It's a top-down command and control federal model for local schools that's more designed for places like Louisiana and Mississippi than it is for Minnesota. So no, I do not support that. In addition, this is a serious bill. We're negotiating with the Senate on the Senate author right now, so this is something we want to continue to move forward on. And I want to be clear that I respect the work that the department has done in putting together the waiver application. As a member of the legislature, as a member of the legislative branch, I do have concerns about federal waivers invalidating state statute. And this is meant as an effort to continue that work with the department and making sure that whatever waiver is implemented, whatever changes take place, are done so within the department's legitimate, through proper rulemaking, and in addition through state statutes. So with regards to nullifying the waiver, that's not what this does. And I believe very strongly as a member of the legislature, as I know you do, that when there are changes in state law, they need to go through the state legislative process.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Chair Garofalo. Actually, your last point, you and I agree on.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, a number of my questions have already been posed, but I do have one or two others. One of them has to do with non-Title I schools, and it's my assumption that there is some expense involved in the process of trying to turn a school around, and that I don't have any objection to. But I'm just wondering, Representative or Chair Garofalo, how do schools who are not Title I schools, who may be on your list, finance this process? And I have an additional question if I could.
Representative Garofalo, I realize that we're supposed to be discussing policy, but if you'd like to answer that, go ahead.
Sure. Madam Chair and Representative Benson, I'm not aware of a fiscal note on this bill yet. I'm not aware of a fiscal note yet on this bill. Yeah. Should that become available, that would be discussed in the Education Finance Committee. That's where this bill is going from. But I would come back to my original statement to Representative Norton in terms of the definition of non-Title I eligible public schools. I would need an example of what my understanding is that all public schools are eligible for Title I, whether they receive those funds or not. Is a different story, but that's my understanding, but I'm certainly willing to delve into that longer in the Education Finance Committee.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then do you assume that middle or what we call junior high schools are part of this process? It seems that you're talking about elementary schools, but then we go to secondary schools, and are middle schools, in your understanding, part of this?
The
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Benson. 2.7, I'm just going to read through this to make sure I have it right. Lowest performing elementary schools and the 5% of lowest performing secondary schools with a grade 12. So middle schools would be under this categorization would be not secondary. So they would be elementary, if I'm reading it right.
Okay. Representative Benson.
And then my last question, and this is really the more important one, I think, to me, and it is, what process have you gone through as far as the Department of Education is concerned? Have you visited with the commissioner or her designees having to do with this particular bill, and do you have any understanding of what part or parts they accept or support or object to? And the only reason I ask, it's similar to the questions I asked concerning Representative Peterson's bill last week. I tried to convince Representative Peterson at that point that if he were willing to take a little more time and work directly with the department, we might be able to get a more bipartisan bill through. And so I'm just wondering, as far as the formulation of this particular bill, have you spent time with the department? Since we have a divided government, those of us who are in the minority now, when we were in the majority, we understood very clearly that if we were to get any legislation through, we had to work with the commissioner at that time and get some kind of acknowledgement from the Governor Plenty, that he would support the legislation. So, you know, to me, we're here to actually formulate and pass legislation that will become law and have positive effect on education, rather than simply putting up bills so that we can get a bad vote from the opposition and that kind of thing. And that is a bipartisan practice around here that I found obnoxious for the last 6 years that I've been here. So I just don't like to participate in it myself. So I'm just, what process did you go through with the commissioner's office?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Benson. I can assure you the purpose of this is not the first, primary, or secondarily to get a bad vote on any issue. First of all, the Education Finance Committee has had multiple hearings on the issue of the waiver process and the waiver application to find out what was a priority for the department, what the motivation was for the waiver application. In addition, upon the feedback from the federal government, a lot of the feedback that the nonpartisan panel provided of experts in the waiver application actually included many of the concerns we had voiced at the committee level. So this ongoing committee, this dialogue is not beginning today. It's been going on for a couple of months. In terms of feedback, I'm open to feedback. Certainly any ideas people have to improve this going forward. But I do think that one of the things we want to do from a time standpoint is we want to move sooner rather than later to give school districts the opportunity to respond to whatever framework, whatever scheme is put in place for those schools. But I look forward to continuing that process. And my final point was, I forgot what my final point was, but that was, Representative Benson, I do look forward to working with the department on it. If you look at the four criteria that are laid out in the bill, number one, proficiency and four, graduation rate, they're the same criteria the department put together. We do have a legitimate difference of opinion on student growth about whether it's a normative growth model or a growth to standard. And then the achievement gap language, I think, is virtually, I'll let the department characterize it, but it's meant to move forward and continue the dialogue, Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, maybe since Mr. McHenry is sitting there at the table, whether he's comfortable or wishes to make a comment or not, but I'd be curious to get the department's take on this particular bill and the interchange between your department and the author of this bill.
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, Representative Benson, thanks for the question. We obviously, this has been the NCLB waiver has, as we heard in committee last week, it's been a big deal. We have spent significant time trying to involve as many people as possible through the process, try to get as much input, and we appreciate the opportunity to come to the committees and speak to this specifically. We did, as Chair Garofalo was saying, we did spend a significant amount of time with our stakeholder group to come up with recommendations for the waiver. And those there was a significant amount of time by a variety of experts, and we I've always kept the door open to have as many people at the legislature participate in that. We think that the waiver that we put together was based on what was a collaborative effort that was put forward with the best suggestions. Sometimes there wasn't a unanimous decision. Sometimes there was maybe one or two people who didn't necessarily agree with what we were putting forth. But there was all discussions were thoroughly vetted in that process. And we have had the opportunity to answer questions in front of committee. We've done that in front of the letter, with letters as well. And we feel what we put together as far as the waiver was under our authority, the best we could put forward, and we're very happy with that. We're looking forward to moving forward with that. We appreciate the ongoing conversation, appreciate you know, the dedication from you all, and seeing bills like this. I think we do have, you know, obviously we're open to continuing talking with all of you on any bills that you are working on, and we always keep that door open. With the chair as well. But we do think that this was the waiver that we put forward was something that put together some flexibility to work with our districts, and with our districts means working with our parents, working with our students, working with our teachers, our principals, and our administrators. And we put that flexibility in for a reason, so we could get some more locally developed decisions that's best for the local area. And we think that this might put a little bit more restrictions in going back on that. But that being said, you know, we do have concerns with this, and we do need to see what the fiscal note looks like on this. But we always will have our door open to continue conversations.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question would be to the department, if you're willing. If bills like this move ahead and significantly change the scope or depth or breadth of the waiver that we've already applied for, what does that mean to our waiver? Would we have to reapply for it? Could it jeopardize it, or what happens?
Mr. McHenry.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Mr. Kramer, who's our federal education specialist or liaison, to answer that question.
Welcome to the table, Mr. Kramer. Say your name for the record and give us your answer.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Sam Kramer from the Minnesota Department of Education. It's good to be back with you this morning. As to Representative Norton's question about potential delays as a result of legislation that would change the process, it's my understanding from our discussions with the Department of Education that what we have put in the application is what has been approved. Any changes to that would need to be vetted through the Department of Education and could involve, time-wise, I couldn't say how long it would take. I would just caution that there are 28 states lined up to submit their applications for the new waiver in the next weeks here. I'm guessing we'd get in the back of the queue if that was the case. As for implementation of the waiver, the biggest issue that I can see in terms of the timeline, not to speak to the what's better or best between the two, but in the timeline would be that if a change in the growth model was necessary, that would cause significant delays in the way that we're calculating growth and the multiple measurements rating for the development of those lists, which would push the announcement of those lists out probably past May, which is the schedule right now under the current waiver.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Grafflo.
Madam Chair and Representative Norton, outside of the subject matter of this bill and what you may agree or disagree with, it is the legislature's responsibility to change state law. It's not the federal government's, and it's certainly not the executive branch's, and that remains consistent regardless of who controls this chamber or who controls the executive branch. And I would just take the opportunity to remind members of the committee of that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Norton.
As a member of a majority party for 4 years on this very committee, who had a governor with and the department with different opinions, I respect what you're saying, but I also know it doesn't work quite as easily as one might think, and we do have a governor and a department who has some authority as well and has to work within the confines of the final decision, not just this committee's wishes.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Norton, just to be clear, we're working with the department, but this bill gives the waiver a chance to work. So there are multiple legislative remedies available to both the Minnesota House and the Minnesota Senate, and departments and commissioners that just ignore the legislature and drive over them like a truck. We've read this book. We know how it doesn't end well.
Representative Garofalo, closing comments.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the discussion. I look forward to working with the governor and the department on moving this bill forward.
And with that, members, I renew the motion that House File 2180 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign.
No.
The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to K-12 Finance. Thank you, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Chair Erickson, members of the committee.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move Senate File 946 to be before the committee, and I have a delete everything amendment.
Thank you, Representative Chair Erickson, and she moves that her bill pass and be recommended to move to the Senate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the delete everything amendment, the DE5. And yes, Madam Chair, my recommendation is that we accept the DE5 and that in the end, when this bill is amended, that it be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education and Finance.
Representative Erickson, Ms. Larson has a DE amendment for you, technical amendment.
Madam Chair, members, on the document S0946 DE5, page 1, line 5, 4-year, please delete 4-year and insert 5-year. Thank you.
Representative Erickson, do you want to move that technical amendment?
Absolutely, I move that technical amendment. It is technical, so I accept that, yes.
All right.
We need to make those changes so it conforms.
Okay. All right, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. All right, the amendment is incorporated into your bill. Would you like to proceed, Representative Erickson? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Well, members, I'm about disrupting the class, about bringing some innovation, some disruptive innovation to our K-12 system through this proposal, which, as you can see, is a Senate file, and it did pass last year, and it was included in the omnibus policy bill. And the governor's concern to Senator Olson and me was that it needed specificity. So we went back to the table and provided specificity for this 5-year pilot project, which would begin in 2013-2014, because we want, at least I want to give these districts who are interested in disruptive innovation to have some time to plan. So as you notice, the applications would be due to the commissioner on February 1 of next year. This is intended to improve student learning, to improve school outcomes, to allow districts to, as I said, use a little disruptive innovation if that's what will help them improve learning, and maybe combine resources or work in innovative ways in that area as well. It is my intent that the commissioner select between 3 and 6 groups of school districts to participate in what I call a first-come, first-serve basis, rather than the demographics, because I think we have districts already who are gearing up to do this, so why not move forward if they have ideas in place? I see this as a collaborative effort between teachers and school personnel. I think you know that we have great teachers in our classrooms who have ideas that you couldn't even begin to list as great ideas for turning around learning, motivating students, and moving us back to that that ranking of being number one in this nation. There is also a requirement that the commissioner give us a report when the pilot is soon to be completed, so that we can review the efficacy of it as a legislature. That will have some cost to it, and that's why I'm referring this to K-12 education. With that, Madam Chair, I'll stand for questions.
Are there, I think maybe we'll start with, do you want to have testimony in favor of your bill, or those in the audience?
Yes, I would love to have testimony.
All right. Our first testifier is Gary Amoroso of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gary Amoroso. I serve as Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And we'd like to share that our members are very, very excited about this opportunity that may be presented up to us.
Do you have a cell phone?
Excuse me. Superintendent Amoroso, I believe you have a superintendent here to testify to. Would you like to come up together, or are you separately?
Sure. We could come up together. We have Jay Haugen, our superintendent.
Jay Haugen.
In Farmington.
That's right. Did you get it up? Sorry to have interrupted you.
No problem.
Please proceed.
I apologize that my cell phone went, caused some disturbances. As mentioned, our members are very, very excited about this opportunity. So often, the things that we work with are mandated to us from the federal government or even from our state. And what we're excited about with this bill is that it provides an opportunity for the educators within this state to work in a collaborative fashion on behalf of being innovative, on behalf of truly looking at what needs to be done to meet the needs and raise the achievement levels of our students. This provides an opportunity for collaboration within a district, with our teachers, with our support staff, with our administration, with our boards, as well as then provides an opportunity to have districts from within an area, from within a region, look at how they can best utilize resources, and we all know resources are very challenging right now. So if we can create ways to be more efficient, but yet have an opportunity to improve the opportunities that our children are experiencing, that's what we're interested in. And we're pleased that this opportunity is in front of us, and we certainly hope that as you consider this, the bill, that you will provide support to it, because we truly believe that it will give us a chance to do some things at the local level based on what's best within our various regions on behalf of children. With that, I would stand for any questions, Madam.
Thank you, Dr. Amoroso. Are there any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if we did vote or accept the A2 amendment.
We haven't taken that one up yet.
Okay.
Yeah. Yes, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm looking at the bill, and it talks about allowing. And I think I first want to say I totally agree that partnerships between districts, particularly when resources are shrinking, are an excellent idea. I watch it happen, or at least behind the scenes right now, and there's some examples in the counties and cities that are happening. School districts, I hear talk of sharing HR among a number of districts, and this allows groups to do it. So the couple questions really I had were, are you limiting the number of districts that are allowed to do this in the bill? I'm not seeing that. So I, as I'm reading it, I don't see that you're limiting it. Two, do we need, pardon?
Representative Norton, at least two.
Okay.
Two or more.
Right, so more. So there's no limit to how many districts could do that. I believe they can do it currently. So I don't think this law is changing anything that districts could currently be doing if they so chose. And so with that, my question is on lines 1.24, it says that the commissioner, education commissioner, must approve adding additional schools, which actually is a limiting factor because right now districts could do it without the commissioner's approval, and so this would actually limit districts from being able to expand their pilot because currently they don't have to ask the commissioner because they can do it anyway without this law.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Representative Norton, for your question. It's true that districts can do most of what's in this bill. I just put a signpost up to say you can go this direction. The reason for the language in 1.24 was that if a district is joining
in midstream, it's probably important that the commissioner be aware of the addition of that. And it's not intended, it's not my intent that it be this rejection or acceptance, but that the commissioner is aware that additional districts want to join this partnership. And I guess it's just limiting. You're right. It's limiting it, and we certainly could get rid of the commissioner's approval, but we'll wait to see what the department says about some of that, because I have worked with the department on this, and I think we've reached almost all of their concerns.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, I would suggest, I mean, maybe it could be notify the department when it's happening as opposed to approval, because I do worry that it could be limiting. But anyway, just throw that out there for your consideration.
Well, Representative Norton, that's an excellent idea. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the testifier, Dr. Amoroso? Yes, Representative Benson.
Well, I noticed is there a fiscal note then with this?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Benson. The Senate file had a $25,000 fiscal note, which is why I've requested that this be referred to K-12 finance.
Okay, and the reason The reason I asked then, I had assumed that maybe since there is a cost factor, that you inserted the comment about the commissioner, that somehow the commissioner would then expend those funds to the districts that wish to participate, or where do those funds go to, and what is the objective or the use of those proposed funds?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, the cost is for the report.
Are there any other questions of the author? All right, Dr. Amoroso, would you like to have your superintendent testify?
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jay Haugen, currently superintendent in Farmington, Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to just spend a few minutes with you and the committee. You know, our world has changed. It's changed in stunning ways. It's become fast-paced and connected and competitive. Our students have changed in much the same way. If you drop someone from 50 or 100 years ago into the world today, I think it would take their breath away. Mm-hmm. But if you drop into one of our classrooms, they would think, I'm comfortable here. This is what was designed and has been here for over 100 years. The one place I would say that you would see a difference is in some of our classrooms. I have teachers, and every school district has teachers, that are at the point now where they're able to diagnose each and every student's learning, where they're at, prescribe the next thing they need to do to meet their needs. I'm calling them teacher physicians. It's amazing the level that some of our teachers have. But it's not happening everywhere. It's not happening nearly as often as it needs to happen. It is the reason we have some improvement in our student outcomes, but not nearly what we need, and not nearly meeting the world today. When we look at this issue, I think we do what's natural to us. We try to figure out which law or rule or what can we put in place that might change the equation. Or we say, what kind of waiver could you get, or what could you do to get around some of those rules to move ahead? Well, in the end, those things are helpful, but they're not very transformative. I think we need to transform. Because, you see, I think it's not any one thing. It's everything. It's the weight of everything. It's the system and the structures that we're part of. Our system does not give our teachers wings. I think we need to fundamentally change. I think we need to change the way we use our school day and what it looks like. I think we need to fundamentally change our school year and what it looks like. I think we need a customized education for every child, and I hope I'm not scaring anyone. But I think we do. We need to customize. That's the only way we're going to 100% of our kids meeting their full potential, if we can ultimately customize for every child. I think that takes maybe changing the responsibilities of our staff and the support we give our staff. I think we need to think about things like continuous progress for our students and what that looks like. I think that what if we thought of teachers as having caseloads instead of classrooms to break out of this group in, group out kind of mentality. I think with technology we can get 24/7 learning. We've been having some of these conversations for a couple years now with superintendents, and can see pathways, for instance, to with technology to realize a couple hundred days, 200 days of instruction for our kids instead of the number we have now with no additional dollars. But I can tell you right now, the creativity to do those things, the planning that goes in, is nothing compared to the creativity and time it takes to figure out how to do it within the current structure, within the current system, and within the current expectations of our communities. And so there's two things that I'm hoping for in this bill. One is to give us, at least at the start, kind of a blank slate to take a look at this anew and to do it collaboratively with the power that it's not one district sticking its neck up to do something, it's groups of school districts and groups of school districts working very closely with the Department of Education. I think in there needs to be some kind of incentive as well for all that to happen, and I think that idea of a blank slate, we all get into this profession because we want to make a difference, and the idea that we could maybe work together and really truly make a difference, I think is very, very engaging for all of us. You know, without this kind of effort and with how competitive the world is becoming, you know, I have some fear for our future. So I'm ready to be engaged. I'm already working with a number of school districts on these kind of issues. Last week, Spring Lake Park in our school district had a joint session where over 30 staff from each school got together, and it's just not a one-time thing. We're getting together on March 7th. We're getting together on April 11th, each time with major numbers of our staff, to start talking about what we can do together. But the more incentive and that we can have to make that happen, I think the better chance we have of pulling this off and kind of building a better tomorrow for our kids.
Thank you very much. I believe that Representative Peterson, you have a question for Dr. Haugen or Superintendent Haugen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I certainly agree that districts should be working together, and I know they are. They maybe could do it more. What specifically are you eliminating in the current process of getting together? What is this bill, I'm trying to say, what does this bill do to give you more flexibility? What are the things that this bill will offer that you can't do already?
Yeah.
Superintendent Haugen.
Thanks, Madam Chair. You know, this is so different. I have testified for other bills in the past where there was specific things. And I would say, you know, this is how this will help us, or that is how that will help us. You know, this is one, we're involved in a strategic planning process in my school district right now, and I learned something I didn't know about true strategic planning. Strategic planning is planning for what you don't know what to do. When you don't know the pathway, when you don't know what you need to do, that's great. Then you're planning great strategy. When you have something that's really important, but you're not sure how to get there, and you get a bunch of minds together and figure it out. And so a little bit, so what I really want out of this bill and think about is, this again, this idea of a blank slate, that if we were to sit down and redesign our schools, really what would it look like? And I think it's kind of back to my comment, it's not any one thing, it's everything. So how about if we could kind of start over and re-envision something new? So I know that's unsatisfactory, but...
Representative Peterson.
Madam Chair, yeah, it is unsatisfactory. You know, I'm wondering, are you, you know, you've got the Title I, you've got all of the Title I, the waivers and all of the kinds of things involved with the low-performing schools, and I assume that's still part of this, but what are the laws? What are the things that are impediments in you doing this, and what does this bill specifically give you the authority to do that you can't do now?
Superintendent Haugen. That might be a better question for the author of the bill. It's up to you, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. I'm sorry. I was just interested in the whole dynamic of this. Well, Madam Chair and Committee, as I said earlier, this is a signpost. Yeah. We have in law site governing. We have site-based. Those initiatives have not been used, and so to find a piece of legislation that would be more empowering for our teachers is something that I thought about. As you know, this was Representative Downey's reform bill,
and he's very busy with other reforms, so I asked to take it over and work with the department and work with the school districts. And it just seems that we need to send to them a signal that it's okay to do this, and we're going to, as much as we can, support you in your different endeavors. So, no, it's probably not needed, but again, we seem to send messages to our school districts so often, limiting them, and this is empowering them.
Yeah. Yes, Representative Peterson.
I'm still searching for what is going to be specifically different in this bill. I mean, I know we have site-based schools, we have the self-governed schools, you know, we have the opportunity to work together already. So this must provide something, or it must open up something that will allow you to do something other than what's already in law.
Representative Erickson, I'll let you decide.
Madam Chair and Representative Peterson, well, it is a pilot, so that would indicate maybe a model for this disruptive innovation that we're looking at, that maybe across the state there'd be more freedom. You know, think of it as a freedom for school districts instead of inhibitions and limiting. I see it, as I said earlier, as empowerment. And there is, you know, definitely some specifics to the plan. I think it's going to take a lot of time for teachers to, not a lot of time because they have a lot of ideas, but it's going to take time for teachers to say, yes, I think that working with X school district will make us achieve at a higher level because they do this and we'd like to do that, and that becomes part of our timeline maybe to move achievement closer to proficiency than it might be. You know, and I guess with that said, I'd have to sit here and think about some more specifics.
Representative Peterson, one more and then me.
One more. Well,
thank you.
As I read this, it says they're going to basically, as I read this, you would change to the concepts of districts becoming charter schools, right? I mean, am I reading that incorrectly or?
Madam Chair, Erickson. Representative Peterson.
No.
No, there are no references in here to charter schools.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. No.
Okay.
This delete everything takes out all of that.
Representative.
But the rules and regs, are we changing any of the current
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, no, we are not.
Okay.
If you look at line 1.22, other applicable conditions, regulations, responsibilities, duties, provisions, fee schedules, and legal considerations needed to fully implement the plan. Those have to be a part of the plan that's submitted. So we're not deviating. There's no suggestion of becoming a charter school in here. These are partnerships, and these are opportunities for the best of the best to come together and get better. And if they're not the best of the best, the better of the better, to come together with the better of the better, or those who need lots of improvement to come together with models for improvement. I mean, I don't want to limit the opportunities that could result from this.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. We do have several other people who want to ask questions. Representative Benson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I was just going to, you know, I've signed on to this bill, and I just assumed it was kind of like putting up, you know, a billboard along the road for all the school districts to look at and say, hey, go ahead and do that, and I can see some use in, you know, in doing that. I wish I had thought of putting an amendment on to suggest we also remind school districts that they can organize self-governing schools, too, the bill that
That's your bill.
I was able to get through and the governor signed. And there is some facility to that, but I do have a question, and that is, it seems that when districts would like to get together and try to share ideas, and so there tends to be an expense to that. We're having to release teachers and send them off someplace, and maybe even if it's a very fancy operation, provide them with a lunch. But anyway, I'm just wondering, had you thought Representative Erickson about including some funding to make it more attractive for school districts, make it possible, especially those with tight budgets, to do some of these innovative collaborative workings together, because lots of times they don't do it because their budgets are so tight already that anything new disrupts and takes away from other operating revenues. So that money times is the problem, even though some think all reforms can be done without any additional cost.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Benson, on line 114, they need to demonstrate efficiencies in delivering financial and other services. So I think this is a message to school districts that in tough times, tight economic times, if you can find efficiencies and ways to operate within your budgets and be able to free up dollars for learning, that's what we would like to see you do. And perhaps the superintendent has a comment to that.
Superintendent Haugen.
I certainly do. Thanks, Madam Chair. Anytime we get together as school district, you know, school districts and talk about how we're going to collaborate, we often get to collaboration around some of the things that have been mentioned here. Maybe HR or business office and things like that. And those are important, but you know, those are only 4% of our budget. If we can really collaborate, you know, at the classroom level, if we can start sharing more of our where we really spend our dollars, you know, I think we can certainly capture dollars that can be used to improve all of the schools that are working together. I like your billboard comment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though we can do these things, we're not doing these things. And why aren't we doing these things, and why aren't things changing at a real deep and large level? I can just tell you from a person, I've been a superintendent for 17 years, that there's some very strong expectations for what school districts look like. And anytime someone on their own tries to stick their head up to do something different, it's really, really difficult. But if a group of school districts could not only be emboldened to get together, but if we can say that it's kind of a sanctioned activity. It's not something the crazy superintendent, school board, or the staff dreamt up. It's something that really is vetted and worked through, you know, through our state, and it's part of a program. I think it does give us more power and credence in doing things.
Just a quick follow-up, Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Benson.
Well, Superintendent Haugen, do you see that when you do these collaborative efforts, especially among the teaching staff, when they're getting together, that there is a cost to your district or the other districts that are participating? And I am concerned about that because the budgets are tight. You have to pay for a super, teachers to come into the classroom to cover substitute teachers and so on. So where do you get the money?
You know,
Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair and Representative Benson, I think that's a question for the Finance Committee to ask. And if the superintendent wants to comment on it, that's fine. But we're going to discuss this bill in Finance. And I know you're not a member there, but it'll get a thorough vetting there, I'm sure.
Superintendent Haugen, Representative Peterson has given you the opportunity to comment. Do you want to?
Well, just that I do realize there's always upfront costs. You save on the back end, but you need to come up with money ahead of time so that you have to invest to save later. So that is on my radar.
Thank you very much. We have two other people, representatives, that would like to have a question. One is Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yesterday, I gave a talk to the Roseville Historical Society. They asked me to talk about my 20 years in the legislature. And my main point was that if anyone saw the movie Groundhog Day, that after 20 years, I feel like I'm living Groundhog Year or something like that. And every idea that we seem to ever have here, and I looked back in my first legislative reports to prepare for that talk, here we are back to some of the same topics every year after year, or so it seems. And in my first legislative term, I did have a bill. I was only the second author on it, but it was a bill that my leadership, the DFL, thought I would get in too much trouble if I was the chief author, so I was the second author instead. But it was to have school districts have a chance. I got in trouble anyway, by the way. but it was a chance for school districts to be charter districts. And I saw that as a good thing for kids, but also to vet the issues of the rights of charter districts and the unequal playing field that regular districts had when they didn't have the flexibility that charter districts had. And the idea was that, though, that charter districts got less money, and so therefore they deserved the flexibility that they had with rules and regulations. But as we know, those of us who have been here a while, charter schools come year after year and they want the same money that regular districts have, and they haven't been able to do it even with their flexibility with less money, or else we just plain haven't kept up with the per pupil formula. I would submit the latter. But in any case, I signed on to this bill, and if you'll notice, there's an interesting mix of authors, you know. Representative Erickson, Downey, then you get to Greiling, then B. Peterson, and then John Benson and Sandy Peterson and Carol McFarland, Steve Simon, and the same thing in the Senate. And I think this is a very interesting bill. It's not as interesting now that we've amended it. And to Chair Erickson's credit, she's trying to get something passed. But I think it's still an interesting bill. And it will bring up, I think, rich discussions in this committee later of what rules and regulations that we have for regular school districts that charter schools don't have to follow are needed. And I would submit that we should, over time, those of you who are continuing on, look at having a more even playing field for school districts and charter districts than we have right now, as long as the money has gotten to be pretty uniform. But some of the things I'm interested in here are the freedom of the calendar, which we cannot get through the legislature, and that's specifically in here. This bill is better than the one I had in the sense that it's asking for districts to coordinate and work together, and you know that I think will bring into question how many districts do we need anymore, how many superintendents. I compliment the superintendents for testifying for the bill, because I would think we could use less superintendents if this model actually comes to fruition in the way that it might. The big question, and we'll get to that when we get to Representative Davney's amendment, is the charter school teachers don't have to be unionized, and regular districts do. And I think that's an issue that we may or may not get to with his amendment. I'm going to support his amendment. But I think that should be discussed over time as well, as it applies to charter schools, because I have worried that that part of how they do make their budgets balance as well as they do is the fact that teachers, when they reach a certain level of compensation in charter schools, if they can, they would like to transfer over to regular school districts, just because they kind of flatten out. Charter schools cannot afford to pay for teachers after they reach the age of 30 or so. And that's a real discussion that we need to have. So I look forward to the Davney Amendment tipping our toes into that. But I think over time that one has to be tackled along with this very worthy bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Greiling. Representative Tilbury.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I agree with a lot of things that been said today. It seems that the bill is pointing out a direction. We called it signposts and billboards and so on, that I feel I have agreement with. But then Superintendent Haugen, you had said something with one of the districts in my, or one of the school districts in my legislative district, that you got together with Spring Lake Park and you worked on some things and you had some things in the future. And then I thought of Representative Peterson's comments of what kept you from doing that. and obviously you're doing it, so it's taking place. And I would think that you'd want to have more of a groundswell approach of, you know, from local districts gathering together and building it up, and then people watching, other districts watching your success, and then wanting to copy it, and then all of a sudden you have great success, and it isn't dictated by the state. I happened to notice that Representative Biskins was in the audience. I thought maybe he was here for this bill saying that we're growing government, because he would have said something like that. But I see the point that you're trying to do, but then I also see the other side where it sounds like it's duplication and it costs money, and what are we doing it for?
Representative Erickson, how would you like to respond to that question?
Madam Chair, if the superintendent would like to comment, go ahead.
Representative, our Senate, Superintendent Haugen.
Thanks, Madam Chair. It's just a wonderful question. It helps me clarify something. It's not that there aren't these things going on right now. It's not that we can't point to schools that break the mold and every kid is successful, and then we can't point to classrooms where it's happened. I can't point to a system where it happens. It's somehow we need some. So right now it's dependent on a hero. So you have a hero as a principal, or a hero as a group of teachers or a community, and then those schools really, really work. But if you can't transfer that to another school, you'll have schools right next door to hero schools that are just kind of doing okay and doing the same job as always. And so anything we can do to kind of bring it to the next level so that the system can be the hero. You know, and that's, I know what I'm after. And so you may get right now deep collaboration between a couple school districts there, a couple school districts there, but it's more about happenstance. So how do we take it so it's not happenstance or by luck, or you just happen to have the right set of circumstances? How do we make it, as you kind of suggest, so that it does grow, so it is the natural part of our system? And I don't know that this is the end-all, be-all to where the bill is something that you get started on, and it does, I know they change over time. But right now, I want to get a start of somehow to you know, seed something that will grow.
Thank you. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick comment. First of all, congratulations, Chair Erickson. You have a bill that Representative Tilbury likes because it grows government. So nice job on that. My quick comment, though, is that, you know, what I really like about this bill, I know we've got some specific questions about give me an example, and we kind of double clutch on giving us an example. But what I like about it is instead of the No Child Left Behind approach of top down and we know better than you and we're going to tell you what to do, this is where real ideas and innovations percolate. And so this is what I like about this bill. And I do like the fact that Representative Greiling is on it. It makes me very happy to see that where there is a little bit of peace in the valley when it comes to a few key areas of education that we all believe in. So I think this is an outstanding bill, and I appreciate your testimony. It certainly clarifies a lot of things for me. And I appreciate you bringing this forward, Chair Erickson.
Thank you very much, Representative Woodard. Are there any other members of the audience that would like to testify on this bill? We do. We have the Department of Education, and thank you, Dr. Amoroso and Superintendent Haugen. Please identify yourself for the record, please.
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry from the Department of Education.
Kevin McHenry.
And Madam Chair, members, just want to, you know, thank you again for the opportunity to be in front of the committee. It's been a few minutes, and I do.
You're a very you're a very popular
tell them about our late Friday night meeting. In my office, of course, in the prison. Sorry about that, Mr. McHenry. All business.
Madam Chair, members, I think there were other members involved, and I know that there were other members involved, and I know that 4:30 may be late on a Friday, but it's just, I think, maybe normal time overall. I do want to appreciate the discussion that has been happening here. From the department's perspective, we obviously do want to see our districts and our schools collaborating and innovating. We think that's really important for the educational process. We did have a discussion on this on Friday, and I appreciate Chair Erickson taking into some of our concerns with how we saw this bill laying out. And there has been some significant changes. Just specifically to the bill, I think a couple things we did want to raise as far as the discussion was going this morning. Number one, I think at the end on what were in line 1.24, 1.25, I think the discussion was should the commissioner be notified about additional participants. I think what we're doing in this bill, or what the chair is doing in this bill, is trying to find different ways for collaboration. You know, there is there are methods through joint powers agreements already, but right now I think from the MDE perspective, I think we'd like to keep this language in. This is a different way of oversight of what's happening through collaboration and innovation. And so if districts are through this grant process or through this process are going to invite additional districts, and if it's the commissioner's oversight, I think it's something that we'd like to make sure that we still have approval over. Some of the things that districts do have to do, originally when we were looking at this bill, part of our discussion was if you look at individual districts, depending on how they're going to collaborate, you can have examples of, you know, you may have a QComp district combining with one that's not. Each district has to have their own QComp plan that they have to abide by. There's also staff development plans that each district has, as well as if schools are Title I and they have specific requirements that they have to adhere to. So I think that as the applications are coming towards the department, it's something that we need to make sure that we're not crossing any lines on that, and so that will require some oversight moving forward on that. An additional, looking at a couple different amendments or versions here. You know, obviously you guys did touch on the discussion about the Labor Day start. Just to wade into that, I think there already is a process in place for that. And then further down on the, and I know this is the chair's wishes, but I think we did have to raise a concern on this. On a first-come, first-served basis, line 2.14, if we're going to limit the number, or if we're going to have the department overseeing what these proposals might look like, I think what we might want to be able to do is determine who has the, or what districts have the most viable proposals before deciding. If it's done on a first-come, first-served basis, it may not, while they may be good ideas, it may not be, we may not have the cream rise to the top on that. So I think it might be better to, if we go through three and six qualified applicants, that I don't know if first-come, first-served basis is the best way to do that. And again, I think on this, we might have districts, and we've seen this in QComp districts, where some of the larger districts may have more staff to put together this type of information. And we think that maybe if we did not have the first come first served basis, it may allow districts that have lower staff, that are smaller districts, that they might be able to participate in this program. So those are just a few things that we'd like to raise. We look forward to continuing working with the committee and working with the chair as this bill moves to the finance committee, where we can discuss how the fiscal note might come out. I haven't seen that yet. One other thing I just did want to raise, just to plant the seed, if this is something that the commissioner is going to have to review, as the districts are participating in this, we might request that the districts are providing the department education on an annual basis so we can evaluate how they are performing.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Are there any questions for Mr. McHenry? Yes, Representative Norton.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson and Assistant Commissioner, I'm listening to this and it's making me more nervous the more you're talking, frankly. If districts have a lot of leeway currently in law to be able to collaborate, and I certainly support the concept of encouraging more collaboration, as I said earlier, when resources are shrinking, I think it's a good idea. But it's starting to sound like a lot of top-down, I heard the term approval. And again, I'm worried if this is an approval process that it will actually limit, because it's going to be proposals are going to be ranked on by the department on whether they're appropriate or useful before they've happened. I just have to say, the concept I agree with, what I'm just hearing the department says is making me nervous that we're actually going to limit, because of the oversight, the reporting, the evaluation, we're going to be limiting participation as opposed to encouraging it. So as you guys work together, I just, more red flags came up after that testimony than prior to it.
Representative Erickson, do you want to comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Norton. You've raised my concern that I had all along. The department does really want to be involved, and I try to avoid that. And in our discussions, it has been my impression that the commissioner wants to keep a hold of this process, and I think maybe in future discussions with the commissioner's office, we could return probably to more of a local control rather than the top-down, bottom-up. So I appreciate your saying that.
Thank you.
Representative Norton, do you have a follow-up?
Yeah, I really do appreciate that. I just think if this were a bill that had a fiscal impact and we were giving districts money to try something, I would agree with what I'm hearing the department say, that there should be some oversight, and that is the role of the legislature. And I just want to say one other thing based on Representative Woodward's comments a little earlier. The legislature often micromanages education, and one of the ways that we could stop doing that and allow professionals to make decisions is to put a Board of Education back in the state of Minnesota.
Yes.
So I've had that bill a number of years. We have not had that discussion here at the table, but that might be a more appropriate place to hammer out some of these things than having a bunch of legislators do it. So that's just a soapbox.
Thank you, Representative Norton. Are there any other questions? Yes, Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess it's just a quick comment, too. I agree with Representative Norton, and I think Chair Erickson, you're interested in working on that, because I think that's my concern as well, as the department may try to put a chilling effect on this, that, you know, the purpose of this is an innovative percolation up rather than down. So I would absolutely agree with that. So I hope that we do look at that and see if we can't change that before it hits the floor.
Thank you, Representative Woodard. Are there any other questions from the committee? Are there any other testifiers from the audience, either for the bill? Seeing none, are there any testifiers in the audience that are opposed to this piece of legislation?
Madam Chair, maybe we could move my DE 5 amendment so that it's official.
The Chair, Chair Erickson, would like to move the DE 5 amendment. All those in, would you like to speak to the amendment?
Oh, no, I think we've spoken. I just like it to be official before Representative Daphne offers his amendment.
All those in favor, by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. The amendment is carried. I think I might be ruining this thing. although we do have an amendment by Representative Dabney. It's the S46A2 amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the amendment to be before the committee and ask for a roll call.
Okay. Representative Dabney, the author of the amendment, would like to read the amendment and then ask for a roll call. Would you like to read your amendment, please? All those in favor?
I'd like to talk about it first.
Okay, yes, go ahead.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. And I think the first thing I'm struck with is the sharp dichotomy between the two bills we've heard this morning. Representative Garofalo's bill, as we've all described it, is about a top-down, heavy process, really putting shackles on certain schools. And Representative Erickson's bill is all about, let's take all the shackles, all the chains, all the ropes, all the ties, take the white lines off the road, and let's go! And they may even be the same schools, because there's nothing that would prohibit a district with some of the lowest performing schools in the state entering into, if they were first in line, this sort of innovative structure. So it seems like, as a group, we're confused about what we want to do. I know there's debate in education reform, and it's a good debate about maybe what we need to do with those schools that are facing the greatest challenges and struggling the most is give them the greatest latitude, not the least latitude. But our tendency across the country, not just here, is to give those, is to put the most structures and the most strictures and the most restrictions on those schools, because we all know what's best if we just get them to do it right. So that has nothing to do with the amendment, but I think it's a worthwhile point to make, so I did it. there we go. That's the first thing off the list. I don't think there's an issue with disruptive innovation. I don't think there's an issue with innovative ideas. I'd like to see school districts be more collaborative as well as more entrepreneurial. If District A is more effective with their ELL services, I want them to get out and market those to District B and C, and District B and C to say, you know, we're not so good at this, but they are. So let's hire them to come in and provide our ELL services because they do it better. And we can, you know, and there's nothing in law today that prohibits them from doing that. I do think, however, that innovation to work needs planning. It's not just anything goes and let's throw off all the rules. It's how are we going to do this? And what's needed then to is that same spirit of collaboration and building proposals and plans with different perspectives in them. All knowledge doesn't reside at the school board. It doesn't lie at the legislature. It's not in the superintendent's office. It's not in the teacher's classroom. But each of those elements has a perspective that can be of value. And hopefully when we put them together, we can get solid, concrete proposals for new things. The innovative schools model that, or the self-directed schools model that Representative Benson referenced would allow schools to do that today. What we're missing in here is any protection of the teacher's rights. Everything else is covered, but we're not planning for how do we take teachers who are currently employed, currently have contracts, currently have tenure or continuing contract, currently have licenses, which wouldn't be required under this bill, currently have all the usual structures of duty-free lunch and prep periods and all of that, put them through a five-year or six-year pilot model, and then say, okay, that one didn't work. That's okay. We tried something, and it didn't work. But now how do we bring those people back? And I think we can be planful about this as well as inclusive. So the A2 amendment simply assures teachers that their employment rights are guaranteed. They can always negotiate these things. That's how you get the teacher's perspective at the table. And I'm sorry that Superintendent Haugen left, but I'd remind him that he said that, you know, the current models don't give our teachers wings. Well, you don't get given your wings, you earn them. And you earn them by rolling up your sleeve and doing the work. And that's what we should allow our teachers to do and be collaborative partners in this. With that, members, I'd ask for your support on the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Representative Erickson, would you like to make a comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Dabney. I think you probably prepared this amendment before you saw the delete everything amendment, because there is no reference to charter schools in this. Mm-hmm. So there's licensure will be in place, and so will all the other terms of employment. But I would like to hear from those who might support or oppose this amendment as to whether or not we need it. If it's comfort language, you know, maybe we need to go in that direction, mm-hmm. but. I think I'd like to hear from Mr. Amoroso and certainly Education Minnesota. But
Mr. Amoroso, or we have Education Minnesota.
Yes, we're going to have
Dan Allswiger.
Education Minnesota.
Ms. Allswiger, welcome to the testifying chair.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education Minnesota, and I first would like to thank Representative Erickson for significantly improving the bill. I do think that there are situations or unintended consequences sometimes when you bring people together. Contracts basically provide order and a way of functioning so that you know the processes. And as you might recall, the Groundhog's Day kind of thing, that we had some issues here at the legislature back in 1995, I believe, when there were some issues related to dissolving an educational cooperative. And the question was, you probably remember this, where do those employees go? And if this is a pilot, then are those questions still there? I think that what this does is makes it, if there is no intention, as the superintendents have said and Representative Erickson have said, to make changes, it just is more permissive to do this, then this should be language that should be acceptable to everybody. It's really to try to help those unintended consequences if there is a disruption or what in terms or you dissolve that pilot. I think it would make teachers feel more inclined to be more innovative and say, okay, you know what, I'm going to stick my neck out and I'm going to do this, but I also know that I can go back to my district, that sort of thing, if something happens. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Halschweiger. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Dr. Amoroso, would you like to come to the podium?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our perspective is that it was never our intent, as we had dialogue with Representative Erickson on this bill, and as we thought about this bill, to have it be an opportunity to, have negative impacts on our teachers. We're looking at this bill as an opportunity to collaborate, to take the concepts that our teachers have, work with our administrators, work with our boards and communities, and create something positive for students. What we're not sure about is if this type of amendment were to be adopted, does that restrict some of those conversations? And if it does, then does that really get at the core of what we're trying to accomplish? And so we would have concerns that if adopted, it would constrain what types of innovative activities might be able to be done. Part of the challenge that we have here, and we heard it earlier when Superintendent Haugen was talking and some of the questions were coming, is that there are unknowns here. And many times our human nature is that when we have an unknown, we try and steer away from it. Mm-hmm. We try and walk back to an area that we're comfortable. And this may be one of those situations where we have to be willing to step out and allow the unknown to be there. And we're not interested in having our, using this as a way to remove teachers or using this as a way to have our teachers be impacted in a negative fashion. We're also concerned that with the amendment we may restrict things. And so maybe there's a middle point here, something else that could be talked about. But at this point, we would consider that the amendment is not necessary and would help us to maintain the broadest opportunity to innovate on behalf of children.
Thank you, Dr. Amoroso. We do have a question from the committee. That would be Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is comfort language, I would agree. And I don't think it stands in the way of any innovation at all. In fact, I think it will create more innovation, as the previous speaker. I was just concerned without this language about line 1.22 and 1.23, would those, it talks about other legal considerations and it talks about applicable conditions, regulations, responsibility, would that then say you could negate the teachers' contracts? And maybe I need an official opinion on that. From Lisa, do
Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, our get out of free jail card is notwithstanding any law to the contrary, and we haven't put that in here. This is to comply with existing law to the extent that existing law has application or effect here.
Representative Peterson.
So
so I'm not too sure what that. Do you have a follow-up? I kind of agree. Comfort language would not be a bad thing, as Representative Dabney is coaching me here. I am more comfortable with this language in. I don't think it hurts anything, and it is there, and then there won't be any dispute later on.
Representative Erickson, do you have a final
thank you,
comment?
Madam Chair. And Representative Peterson and Representative Dabney, I'm understanding that perhaps we could word this amendment a little differently and not make it seem like we're setting up a bargaining unit and a school board to be in conflict. And so I think, Representative Dabney, if you would remove this amendment, withdraw it, that is, and allow me to work with Mr. Amoroso and Ms. Allswager on some language that might just be a little bit better in this kind of innovative delivery of educational services, that we can accomplish that in finance.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Thank you, Madam Chair. It's always one of those to start with. But hearing from Superintendent Amoroso that there's not an intent to jump over teachers' contracts, and the same from you, I'm comfortable with withdrawing the amendment. We can have some talks between here and finance and get the comfort language that everybody's okay with about where the white lines are and where then hopefully innovation can sprout as well. So
thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Dabney. And Representative Dabney has removed the amendment, and there will be collaboration before going to finance. Representative Erickson, would you like to make
some comments? So, Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that Senate File 946, as amended, be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Erickson renews her motion that the Senate File 946, as amended, be recommended to pass and to be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed, nay. The motion is passed. Thank you very much, Representative Erickson.
Madam Chair, you can adjourn the meeting.
Thank you. The committee is adjourned. Thank you very much.